Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, everyone. Before we start our US Open Day 2 podcast, we'd just like to send our best wishes to Carla Suarez Navarro, the former world number 6, who's revealed today that she's been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Carla had been hoping to play the US Open, this her final year as a tennis professional, but she's been forced to withdraw from it after feeling unwell. She said on her social media channels that she underwent some tests to try to find out what was wrong. The condition has been detected early, she said, but she will now undergo a 6-month course of chemotherapy. All of us at the Tennis Podcast will keep Carla in our thoughts over the next few months, and we wish her a full recovery as soon as possible.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Right, okay, day 2 of the US Open. How on earth did Andy Murray do that, Catherine Whittaker? He's just won from 4-6, 4-6, 1-3 down. How has he done that? Somebody explain to me.
No messing with the law tonight, is there? Plunge straight in at the deep end.
It's the only question, isn't it? I mean, what's going on?
Well, I said to Tim Hemman, who we had in our Prime Video studio, I said, Tim, if you had to attribute that comeback to one thing and one thing only, I think we're on a time limit, what would it be? And he said, heart. And I think, I mean, obviously that is a word that covers a broad spectrum of things. All of them are totally embodied by Andy Murray. Persistence, tenacity, doggedness, stubbornness, but absolute heart is what got him through a very bizarre tennis match today. I mean, I'm sure in the annals of time, we won't remember the weirdness of the match. That'll sort of all fade away and we'll remember the scoreline and the emotion and whatever ends up coming in the aftermath. But it was a rocky ride of a tennis match for a long time there.
Mm. Someone on Twitter said that there was once a racehorse who died, and when they cut the racehorse open, they realised he had a heart that was bigger than any other racehorse in history. And that feels like the kind of thing that might happen with Andy Murray one day. That's a very morbid take on a very joyous occasion for Andy Murray. But it is one of those things, isn't it? Because we think of Murray as so relatable. And yet, on an occasion like this, I genuinely have no idea how he does something like that. It's thrilling to watch, but I can't explain it. He operates on a different level of guts and defiance and resilience to what I'm capable of even imagining.
In the you say that's a bit morbid, but in the on-court interview immediately after the match, the first question was, Andy, we buried you at the Australian Open last year, and yet here you are. It was just an unfortunate sort of on-the-spot accidental turn of phrase, which unfortunately a lot of Andy's face was obscured by a mask, but I would quite like to have seen his full facial reaction to the declaration that he had been buried by the tennis community.
Well, hopefully we're looking at about 50 years down the road, 60 years, something like that, for Andy Murray to have this this forensic analysis of his heart size.
On it, David. Let's get out of this cul-de-sac.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll tell you what, I think we should have just a bit of history in order so that we know exactly where we are with this Andy Murray story. This is a man that was supposed to retire 20 months ago, and he didn't. he went and had a hip surgery, and he went and had a new metal hip. He then made a comeback, and the comeback went really well, and he won doubles at Queen's, and he played mixed doubles with Serena Williams at Wimbledon, and then he won the singles title in Antwerp, and it was just amazing. And then he looked like he was hitting the buffers. He looked like he was in real trouble when he had the complications and what was it he called it? The impingement of the joint with which was, I think, caused by a sort of bone spur type thing on the hip. And it's causing all sorts of trouble. Didn't play the Australian Open this year. I personally thought he was probably finished, really. That's that point for a about the 28th time. And lo and behold, he comes back, plays last week in Cincinnati stroke New York, has those two great wins over Zverev and Tiafoe, and then lost and didn't look great against Milos Raonic, but comes into this match. And I have to say, I felt pretty confident on his behalf. I thought he would have a struggle against a very good player, world number 48, Yoshihito Nishioka from Japan, who's 24 years of age, man who beat Dan Evans at the Australian Open this year, and who just has one of those really solid, sprightly games, left-handed, can hurt you, but can also stay in rallies. And for an hour and a half, he made Andy Murray look terrible, and Andy Murray made himself look terrible. And at that point, I said on the radio, and I know I said it on the radio because the BBC Sport website copied and pasted my words into their text portal, and I got 74 negative votes as a result of the words that I uttered, which were 464613 headlined, "He may not be able to do this anymore." And I said, "This is one of the worst performances I've ever seen from Andy Murray at a Grand Slam. He's got a metal hip and he may not be able to do this anymore. But looking at this, having covered so many of his matches, I've never seen anything quite like it before. Perhaps he's not feeling very well. I expected to see a fight, tooth and nail. His opponent is good, and I thought he could cause problems, but I expected it to be hyper-competitive and Murray would win. But it's not even close." And I stand by every single word of that.
Yeah, which, it was all true in that moment.
I don't know what you two think. That's how I felt, and I still believe it now. I think I'm maybe – I feel a bit naive, given the guy I'm talking about. But yet again – he's made a complete fool of me, and I couldn't be happier.
Just to clarify, David, your commentary is now getting live voted on, sort of Big Brother style.
Turns out, yeah. That's, very positively.
That's quite a development for the profession.
How many upvotes were there?
41. 41, Matt.
Oh, so yeah, that is...
So you're in the minus numbers, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Let's hope for better tomorrow.
It's a hard read, you know, for anybody who cares about Andy Murray's fortunes, and there would have been lots of people reading that.
It was a hard watch. It was a really hard watch. It's interesting, also in his on-court interview, and he repeated it in a short interview he did with us on Prime, and the shortness of it kind of told you everything. He thanked us at the end for keeping it short, because I don't think he had it left in him to muster any more words, frankly. We'll come on to that more in a minute. But he said he almost was overthinking the step up to best of five tennis. He was hyper aware of how long it had been since he had played a five-set tennis match. Of course, it was that match, I think, 596 days ago against Roberto Bautista Agut at the Australian Open 2019. And that was an unusual match for him. It's not like he was playing tons of Grand Slam tennis five-set matches before that. You know, he is not accustomed to playing that format of the game anymore. And he seemed to imply that he'd almost overthought the kind of marathon, not a sprint element of it. And he was trying too hard to conserve energy in those opening couple of sets. He was hyper aware of the fact that he would need energy for later on in the match, but didn't. It's like, you know, setting off for a 10,000 meter race and with a great kick in the last 800 meters, but letting yourself get lapped eight times in the meantime, so you've got no hope of catching up, no matter how good your kick is. It looked like he'd let it get away from him, and he was so flat and so lacking in energy. He needed to, well, as it turned out, he didn't, because somehow he fought his way through, but he needed to deploy his energy perhaps a little more evenly over the course of the match.
Flat is the word, I think, to describe those first two sets, and it felt as well anticlimactic, and I wondered whether Murray thought that, because this was his big Grand Slam return in singles, and yet he's playing in empty Arthur Ashe Stadium, and there was just no energy in the match at all. And to be honest, I probably underrated Yoshihito Nishioka. I thought this would be a tough match for Andy Murray because I thought it would be physical. But I didn't expect Nishioka to be able to completely outplay Andy Murray from the back of the court, which is what he was doing in those first two sets. He's got an incredibly wicked left arm, and he can maneuver the ball around the court and construct points really intelligently. And as much as I think Murray doesn't rate a lot of the next-gen players, I reckon he would really appreciate and like Nishioka's style. There's a bit of Andy Murray in there in terms of what he's doing on the court. It's very intelligent.
I think he would also appreciate what a competitor he is as well. I don't think Andy Murray enjoys being sort of matched for competitive spirit on the court, and Nishioka absolutely was doing that. He was a terrier, wasn't he? A sort of ninja terrier. Just in it every single moment. It was kind of Nadal-like at times.
I found that fascinating, what you've just related about the interview, because I hadn't heard that interview. I didn't hear the on-court interviews, but that really adds up to me now. We were trying to work it out during commentary, what's going on? Why is he so flat? And I sort of speculated that, a little bit like when we were watching Novak Djokovic last night, Matt, that he was just kind of almost feeling his opponent out, trying to give him a chance to spar, see what he's got, and then work out the best angle of attack. And it seemed like he went through a couple of phases and neither one of them worked. One of them was staying at the back of the court with him. The other one was trying to bully him and really muscle him off the court with some really big hitting. And Nishioka was good enough to handle both styles of play. But as it happens, I couldn't work out why he wasn't getting... Where was the Rottweiler? Where was the anger? Where was the animal in him? And he was keeping it all inside for the sake of pacing himself. I found that's... How many five-set matches has he played over the years? That's extraordinary.
I can't tell you that, but I can tell you a lot. I can't tell you a number, but I can tell you how many times he's come back from two sets to love down in his career, and that is 10 times. And at the US Open alone, it's 4 times. And I don't know how many times players who have played a similar number of matches to him would have done that, but it instinctively sounds like a lot to me. That
I think it's level with Federer, and I think it's more than both Nadal and Djokovic.
He's a wonderful advert for compartmentalizing points and games, I feel, and just in terms of a comeback, you don't mount a comeback with a long-term view. You just have to do it a bit at a time and win little mini battles, and his ability to do that, and all these top players, I just blown away by that.
Speaking of blown away, were those Federer, Nadal and Djokovic come back from two sets down stats off the top of your head, Matt?
Yes, they were, yes.
That is
I mean, there's no verification insane that they're correct. But let's hope they
are. Of course,
that was Andy Murray, like Matt.
we do a daily newsletter, folks, which you can receive into your inbox every single day, and they always include Matt's stat and also our rubbish predictions. Did we get any right today? I don't even know whether
we
did.
I got mine correct. Thank you. Nah. Great minute this has been.
For some reason, I put Venus Williams to beat Karolina Muchova, and at the moment, having changed it, because I thought initially Mukhova, and then I thought, no, that won't happen. And Venus is 4-1 down, first set. So that's working out well. What about you, Catherine? What did you go for today?
I went for Jannik Sinner to beat Karen Khachanov, and it was almost a prediction of absolute triumph.
You really got it wrong.
That match was hilarious.
Yannick Sinner was two sets to love up and then seemed to develop a back injury just to taunt me. And then lost two sets very, very quickly. And then sort of his back seemed to heal itself and I was all excited again. And it went to a... No, Matt Shakey said... I'm interpreting this from live scores, Matt.
Yes. Well, I mean, he had a full body malfunction. The man could not move and yet he somehow managed to get into a fifth set tiebreak again against Hakshinov.
So he still couldn't move in the fifth set when he took it to a tiebreak.
And Hakshinov kept hitting it straight to him. I was screaming at the screen, why are you hitting it to him? And yet... He just couldn't. It was like a magnet. The ball was just going straight to wherever Yannick Sinner was. And Sinner literally was sea ball, smack ball. He had no intention of being involved in any rallies whatsoever. He was hobbling around. He got a time violation because he physically couldn't get to the baseline in time to serve because he was in too much pain at one point in the fifth set. And yet it still managed to go to a tiebreak. But eventually Hakshinov did win it. And Hakshinov himself had a medical timeout during the match. It was quite extraordinary.
So if you want to receive the newsletter and get these predictions, you can.
I mean,
go down our show notes. The link's in there.
That scenario does sound like the very definition of unpredictable.
Yes.
Yeah.
In my defence.
Yeah. So anyway, Matt Stat today was relaying the detail of the 58 breakpoint record of Cameron Norrie yesterday in the US Open history. And you actually unearthed the all-time record at Grand Slams, didn't you? Which was 59 breakpoints in a match. So one more. Where was that again, Matt?
That was the 2011 French Open, the very unmemorable match between Javier Marti and Albert Ramos Vinolas, but there were 59 breakpoints in it, apparently.
To be fair, I'm not sure anyone that's not Cameron Norrie or Diego Schwartzman fans will necessarily ever consider yesterday's match memorable either.
Well, Cameron Norrie was the most upset about creating that record of everybody, it sounded. He didn't sound impressed with that at all.
While we're on stats and Cameron Norrie and Andy Murray, we should probably give the one that has been doing the rounds today. I know you were saying it a lot on Amazon Prime, Catherine, that's four British men into the second round of the US Open for the first time since, when was it, 1974?
1974. Yes.
Catherine, that is a belter.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's not a Catherine Whitaker original. Max.
Just claim it. I didn't
Max,
know.
Our stats guy, came up with it. Whether it was a Max original, I don't know. It, as I say, was doing the rounds. But yeah, I'll claim it. Great.
I have to say, when Dan Evans managed to get his win today and Judy Murray was sat next to me, I did just... twig that you'd said that earlier on in the day on Prime. I didn't actually name check you or Prime, in fact. I just sort of said, oh, by the way, Judy, that's the first time four British men are into the second round of the US Open since the 70s. And she goes, oh, that's good. So I got all the credit.
Well, I quoted you without crediting you as well on air.
What do you mean?
Well, I heard you say on Five Live, this is a love-in, isn't it? Us just sort of enjoying one another's work. I heard you say on Five Live that the scoreline up until the fourth set was an exact mirror of Andy Murray's last Grand Slam match against Roberto Bautista Agut at the Australian Open.
And I got that from Matt Roberts.
Oh, right. So, okay. It's all come full circle. Lovely.
Yeah, from Tennis Podcast Twitter, I got that from. Right. So there we are.
You didn't credit him either. Nobody's crediting anyone. It's an
you
absolute
can also follow Tennis
all.
Podcast Twitter. Hold on a minute. Let's just go back a bit. Who's Andy Murray playing now?
Felix Auger-Aliassime of Next Gen fame.
And he had an epic.
There was a moment where it looked like we might be getting Thiago Monteiro versus Nishioka rather than Andy Murray versus Felix Auger-Aliassime, but we have got that match.
Doesn't have quite the same ring to it. Yeah. What's going to happen in that?
Well, we were only allowed to, well, I say allowed, we were asked only to put two questions to Andy Murray in our interview with him. And of course, when we were told that, we sort of bristled a bit and rolled our eyes. And then Andy Murray sat down and we thought, Okay, seems only kind that we should keep this yeah. relatively short.
Feel bad about asking him one.
Anything at all, yeah. And he was, look, I don't know for sure that he'd been crying, and if he had, then I'm quite sure that fatigue was a massive factor in that, but it was definitely, his voice was raspy and there was a lot of emotion. It was thick with emotion. There was definitely a lot going on there. He said he'd been inundated with messages, and you know, he does get overwhelmed by these moments. He's very aware of the momentousness of it all and the passing of time, I suppose, and the significance of these moments. So yeah, we only had a couple of questions. And so we didn't get a chance to ask him about how much, didn't get a chance to get him to confess as to how much he relishes the opportunity to put the next gen in their place. Because we know that he does. I just want him to
I suspect he would probably quite like Félix Auger-Aliassime.
Yes, I know, but still in principle.
He's lovely, isn't he?
Still in principle.
He will want to just put him... You know, show him what it's all about. You know, who do you think you are?
Totally.
In his own sort of lovely way. So anyway, there's that to look forward to in a couple of days' time. If, I mean, that's assuming that Andy Murray and Félix are fully fit, of course. I mean, that you know, his feet got a battering today, didn't they, Andy Murray? I mean, tennis players' feet are gross at the best of times. But when he stubbed his toe and took his socks off, I mean, I had to avert my eyes.
Yeah, which was quite difficult because Spidercam were trying to give you the most intrusive and revolting close-up of it for a really prolonged period of time. It was horrendous.
I was quite encouraged by what Murray said in his press conference, which was that obviously the comparison came up to that Bautista-Agut match that we've mentioned at the 2019 Australian Open. And he said after that match that it was actually a relief that he didn't win, because there was no way he would have been able to take the court in 2 days' time, because he was just in so much pain and his hip was thronging. And he sort of did a comparison to how he thinks he's going to feel sort of now compared to how he was feeling then. And he said the difference is night and day, and he's so sure he's feeling much better now, and he thinks he's going to get a good night's sleep, whereas he wasn't even able to sleep, you know, 18 months ago because he was in so much pain. And I mean, you know, he's been so used to being on a tennis court and physically hurting over the last 3 years. Whenever he stepped on court, he's been in pain, and he's now in a position where not only is his general quality of life better, but he's on a tennis court and not being in too much pain either. I mean, there's obviously the usual aches and pains, but it's nothing that I don't think he can put up with and kind of deal with. And it's such a massive transformation.
Mm, that's really encouraging, and long may it continue. My mind always goes back to that image you described, Catherine, when you were interviewing him back at that Australian Open when he couldn't get on the stool properly in order to be interviewed by you. And I think that just sums it up to a T, just what a bad state he was in. Well, thankfully, seems he's in a better way now, and he could meet Dan Evans in the third round. Evans today beat a player whose name I am really struggling with, and I'm trying really hard to say it correctly. And I played it over and over on the ATP website, the sound file that they give you, and I still can't say it. Do you know how to say it, Matt?
Oh, you've put me on the spot there, David. Can you give us your
Tiago.
Best shot? Tiago Sabot.
It's apparently... Well, that's how it reads. It reads Saboth Wild or Wild. But when he says it, it's Tiago Zybot, and I cannot even say what the third word is. I just can't make it out at all. Anyway, so we started calling him Zybot.
Should we talk about a certain Finnish tennis player while we're down this particular cul-de-sac?
Oh, yes. Okay, who's that? Evans won, by the way, in three sets, and he was good. End. Carry on.
Emil
Ruusuvuori. who beat Aliash Bedenay today. He has how many
U's? He has four U's in his surname.
Mm.
In a 10-letter surname.
Yeah, four of them are U's. Yeah, anyway.
That's got to be a record.
I think we're going to really need to know how to say that, because I think I think he might be really, really good.
I think, yeah, I think it's a pressing matter to nail that. Yeah.
I tell you what, I think Thiago's going to be pretty good on the old clay as well. I saw him win that tournament in Rio earlier this year. He's very talented. So we're going to have to learn that one as well.
Not as talented as Dan Evans, apparently.
Well, not today, you know. So anyway, third round. Will it happen? That's the big question.
We don't even know yet who Dan Evans plays in the second round, I don't think. Mute or Vesely. Tim Memon asked him in our press conference, or in our interview with Dan a couple of hours ago now. He said, oh, who do you think will win that? And I was expecting a, you know, oh, not sure, you know, both great players. He goes, oh, I think Mute will win.
6-4, 6-4 so far, Mute.
Oh.
So,
well, Dan Evans knows more than I do about Corentin Mute, put it that way.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. So there you go. And earlier on after that, we had Serena Williams won through 7-5, 6-3 today. And she was a break of serve down in the second set against Christiane, her compatriot. Pretty good result that for Serena, isn't it? And the fact that she did it without expending too much.
It's the first time she's played a two-set match since she came back from the lockdown, and she was joking about that afterwards, saying that it's the first time she's won a straight sets match since the 90s was her sort of time frame on it. Just an indication of how much I think it's been on her mind that she's not been able to win these matches comfortably. She was quite off her game at the start. I think she was a breakdown early on. But by the end, I thought she'd really settled and was actually playing quite nicely. And it was quite a comfortable victory in the end. And I think she could probably play at that level for a round or two more and sort of be fine in this tournament before she will need to absolutely raise it in the latter stages. But yeah, a kind of encouraging start, I think, for Serena. Mm.
Louis Armstrong is the court you wanted to be on if you wanted an efficient day, because whilst Andy Murray took 4 hours, 40 minutes for his match, Louis Armstrong got through four matches pretty much. Garbiñe Muguruza 6-4, 6-4 over Nahobino. Dominic Thiem was two sets up when Jaume Munar retired. Sophia Kenin 6-2, 6-2 over Janina Wickmeyer. And Madison Keys 6-1, 6-1 over Tamer Babos. And they're already in two sets down with Dimitrov leading Tommy Paul at the moment. So all very quick over there. Another epic for Auger Aliassime against Monteiro. Any other big matches that we should talk about today? Conter Watson, I suppose, is one we should cover from a British perspective. And that first set was bonkers because I saw, I mean, it was going on at the same time as Murray, but I noticed that Konta was serving for the first set, then she wasn't, then she was set point down several times, and then she won the set.
Yeah, well, Watson served for the first set and also held three set points at 6-3 in the tiebreak. So I think that she had a rotten record against Joe Konta coming into that match. Three times they played, she'd never beaten her. There was really not a lot on paper to suggest that Heather Watson might really even make a match of it. So I was pretty impressed with her today, actually. And you know, I know Joe Konta really played down in advance the strangeness of playing a compatriot. But she did admit after the match, where she certainly admitted to us on Prime, that it is awkward. And I think she's a player that tends to prefer to keep things sort of fairly impersonal on the court and sort of around her tennis. And the fact that, you know, she told us that Heather Watson is one of the British players that she's closer to and gets on better with, I don't think that sits particularly comfortable with Konta in terms of her becoming an opponent for the day. So I was impressed with them both, if that makes sense. And it was definitely a relaxed Joe Konta after the match. I asked her about, just life in the bubble, I suppose, because I know she really likes New York and likes Manhattan. And she said in the past that she feels like that's a contributing factor to the success she's had there over the years. So I said, you know, what's the bubble like by comparison? Expecting her to kind of say, yeah, it's okay, you know. And she said, oh, it's like a cruise ship. It's really weird. It feels like we're sort of bobbing around on the Atlantic Ocean with no way out. And it really was a cure for my FOMO, because she made it sound really awful. So yeah, it was quite amusing, really, and nice to see her in that kind of mood, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a really nice interview there. I often think when you can hear Joe Konta speak, it can be occasionally a little bit like reading corporate management speak, where you understand all the words, but you don't necessarily feel like you've come away really understanding what she's always talking about. She talks about processes a lot, and I just think it's quite difficult to understand if you're not in her inner circle and kind of understanding how her mind works. But she was really open in that interview with you, and just incredibly, just seeming quite relaxed. And she's one of those players, Konta, who, when I was making my, you know, my quarterfinal predictions for this tournament, she was one of the most confident picks I had, that I was quite sure that she was going to do well in this tournament. And I think that's because she had such a good showing in the Western Southern Open. All her past Grand Slam good runs have come off the back of some excellent form just beforehand, when she did well at the French Open, she played well at Rome and Wimbledon, she'd played well at Eastbourne and Nottingham. And I think she's such a momentum player, and she's got that momentum at the moment, and it doesn't feel like she's going to let go of it. I'm confident whenever she steps on the court that she's going to play well, and I think that's reflected in how she's talking and sounding. And yeah, I think there's a real opportunity for her this fortnight.
She's got Sorana Cîrstea next, which is not a bad draw. I think Cîrstea is a good player from Romania. She beat Cristina Mikhail. But I think if Konta's on, she wins that match. The woman that would concern me, looking at the way things are going, I mean, Venus Williams is always a very good player. We know that. She's one of the greats, really. But she's a set down to this Karolina Muchova, who I could imagine causing Konta trouble, the sort of player she looks like.
Yeah, I think once Karolina Muchova grows in confidence and self-belief, she's going to be a force. I put her in my end-of-year top 10 at the start of the year, which is punchy. I recognise that's punchy. I've been let off the hook by the fact that there's not really going to be an end of year top 10, which I'm somewhat relieved by, because I'm not sure Carolina is quite ready to deliver on the promise that I've bestowed upon her. But I do think she's the real deal, and she's got big weapons, she's got variety, she's got the brain, I think. If she could just, yeah, sort of have a couple of moments, have a couple of really big wins, get on a run or two to give her the belief and the confidence and make her feel like she belongs, I do think Mukova is the real deal. Cue loss to Venus Williams.
Well, you'll all know the results, no doubt, by the time you're listening to this. But there we are. That gives you the most up-to-date that we have things just at the moment. Anything that needs tying up from tonight's play will come to you with tomorrow. And we were in that situation last night. Matt and I were keeping an eye on Naomi Osaka, and she ended up winning, but it was three sets. It was pretty tough for her against Misaki Doi. But no real sign, Matt, from what I saw, of the hamstring issue. She looked okay to me.
I agree. When I was watching, I was quite encouraged by the way she was moving and looking. I was slightly more concerned by what she said afterwards, where she said that the leg wasn't feeling great and she's going to have to see how she feels in a couple of days' time. And normally players are keen to play down any injuries. She was quite open about the fact that there is still a problem there. And I definitely think that's the biggest concern with Osaka, because I think she's playing really, really good tennis. Misaki Doi pushed her yesterday and played well herself, but Osaka raised her game in the important moments when she needed to, and she's got these gears that she can go into. And for me, she's one of the most satisfying players to watch when she's hitting the ball as she is at the moment, which is so cleanly. It's such a satisfying feeling to watch her strike a tennis ball, and I really, really hope that her leg is not going to hinder her this tournament. But I am a little concerned still.
Yeah, I mean, you do hope she doesn't have a leg hindering her in this tournament, because you two both think she's going to win the tournament, and that's what you've said in your prediction. So she, you know,
yeah, injury has not been my friend predictions wise so far. But for, you know, completely impossible to predict injuries, I'd be riding high ish sort of.
I always big up my injuries. It's a good idea, you know. Just gets you out of trouble. Did you know, by the way, that there's going to be a Scandinavian derby in the second round between Christian Ruud? Is that right?
Kasper.
No, it's Casper Ruud. Christian's his dad. Yeah. Christian's his dad.
It's not the 90s, David. Get over it.
Yeah, from back when I was around, when I was on the tour as a communications manager, Christian Ruud was a thing, and his son is now a thing. And yeah, the Scandinavian derby pits. Where's Casper Ruud from?
Norway.
Norway.
Norway. Yeah, he's playing the Finnish starlet who was born in 1999. I mean, God, sickening. Emil, how do we say it?
This is we've been here before. Ruusuvuori.
Ruusuvuori. No, it's just you know, the fact that they're playing each other, I found quite interesting.
This is like the Europa League semi-final, isn't it?
Yeah,
that was a Danish
I don't know.
Derby. That was
Ole
Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer against
managers
against FC Copenhagen and their manager.
Right.
Denmark, it's both Danish. It was
it's a
thing.
Very niche.
It was a thing.
The tennis podcast listeners did not know they were getting that tonight, did they? But that's what they've got. Right, do you want to know what's happening tomorrow?
Yep.
Let's have a look. Okay, Arthur Ashe Stadium starts at 12 o'clock local time in New York, so 5 p.m. here in the UK. Petra Kvitova is in action first of all, sixth seed up against, is it Katerina Kozlova of Ukraine, 99 in the world. Then it's Novak Djokovic against Kyle Edmund.
Yep. Do you want me to say what I think is going to happen? I think Djokovic is going to win.
Well, out on a limb there, Catherine
Whittaker. Okay, well, you shouldn't have left a pregnant pause then. Moving on.
Do you think that Edmund is going to win a set?
I don't.
No. I think he maybe a tie break.
I think he's going to win a set. Yeah. I think he's going to worry him in the first two sets for a spell.
Okay.
With his hammer forehand. Yeah. Thorhand. Right. So that's Novak Djokovic against Carl Edmund. And then it's our evening session is Naomi Osaka against Camilla Giorgi. Imagine the balls in that.
I like the sound of that.
Imagine the state of the balls at the end of that.
I'm here for that match.
They're going to be knocking the living daylights out of it. We're going to be recording that, this podcast, tomorrow night whilst that's going on. And nobody's going to be taking any notice of the recording because we're just going to be watching that. So that's tomorrow night. And then Stefanos Tsitsipas against somebody I have to say I have never heard of, called Maxime Cressy, who's 168 in the world.
Yes, and he's unexpectedly not French.
Oh.
Yeah, he's born in Paris, but he lives in Los Angeles, and he's 6'7" tall.
Yes, I think he's a product of the US college tennis system. And I also think he's quite a character, from what I understand.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
And he's playing Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yes. So that could be be fun.
Expect towel-related shenanigans.
So can we record this at 4 in the morning tomorrow then, so we can get that one in as well?
He's not that much of a character.
No. Have I said his name right? I mean, if it's French.
Cressy. Well, he's not French.
Well, it's a French name.
Or sort of origins.
Yeah, but he's...
I think you nailed it, David.
You know.
Oh, awesome. Excellent. Right, and then Louis Armstrong court is Angelique Kerber against Annalena Friedsam, who's 109 in the world, her compatriot. So Kerber, my pick for the final, is going to make her next stride towards that final berth. And then we have Brandon Nakashima, who's 223 in the world, but up and coming, coached by, partially at least, by Pat Cash. And he's taken on Alexander Zverev. Have you seen much of Nakashima at all?
Nope.
Have you seen anything of him? I think I've seen half a set.
No, I think I've seen him on Instagram.
Oh, right. He can move, I think.
Yeah, I think he's one of those good movers with smooth ground strokes is what I have in my mind of him.
Those are words that you'll be hearing on Prime Video from my mouth tomorrow.
Am I right in saying that Karolina Pliskova is playing tomorrow?
Yes, she must be.
She's next on.
Because she gave a fantastic...
She takes on Garcia.
She gave a fantastic quote about Caroline Garcia. It was classic Pliskova shade, where she was describing... She was describing how good Garcia is, saying she's a dangerous player, likes these courts, and then she said, "But nothing unbeatable."
Oh, splendid!
That is so
great. What do you
think?
Do you think that Garcia can win that? I mean, do you think she will win that?
Garcia,
would you be picking Garcia for that?
No,
I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't.
She can though. I find Caroline Garcia inexplicable. I don't know why she isn't a top 10 player all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
When I think of the first tournament that I covered, the first WTA finals I covered for BT Sport, was it the first one or the second one? I think it was the second one. She was on that rise, that crest of a wave, and she just forced out Jo Konta at the very last minute by winning Beijing and Wuhan. It was incredible what she was doing, and she played wonderful tennis as well at the WTA finals. And I have to say, I feel quite shortchanged by what she's done since then. And I don't know her at all, but I like the way she comes across, and I love watching her play tennis, and I agree. I think she should be doing more than she is. She shouldn't be unseeded.
She's also had the Andy Murray seal of approval, didn't she? Very, very early on in her career. I think she was playing Sharapova at the French Open, and Murray tweeted, "This this girl is going to be world number one day, mark my words, or something like that.
He should join the tennis podcast.
You've let Andy Murray and David Law down, Caroline.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Denis Shapovalov after that. So nobody's going for Garcia then?
No. You predicted Shapovalov would lose on day one, David.
Yeah, so. but he's right, also got Shapovalov in the quarterfinals. He was doing some...
hedging. He loves a hedge. Have I? Does David?
Pretty sure you do.
I didn't even know that. Maybe I did it accidentally. maybe it's heart ruling head, because, you know, I do like Denis. And he pulls off the old Agassi outfit quite well. He's playing the Korean player Sunwoo Kwon, who's 73 in the world. I don't think I've seen him play yet. And then we've got Madison Bringle against Diana Yastremska. I'm just flicking through to see if there are any other real highlights on the order of play that catch my eye. Oh, there's Cameron Norrie on court 5, third on, against Federico Coria, which is a pretty good second-round draw, I would have thought.
No relation to Guillermo.
No, how disappointing. Unlike what Guillermo's doing these days.
It is important to check, though, because obviously Sebastian Corda is very much a relation of Peter Corda, and you can get carried away with all this and just, yeah, anyway, no relation.
Oh, Matt, we got Marketa Vondrousova against Alexandra Sasnovich.
Oh, yes.
Is that relevant to you?
Relevant to us both, David. We are the...
Yes.
The Sasnovich cabal. It's not a gang I
that
thought
like
I'd be in.
A doubles partnership.
Yeah, normally I'm very much in the Vondrousova camp, but my allegiance has switched due to my predictions.
How did Kuzmova get on today, Matt?
I don't think she's played yet. I think she's playing...
Well, everyone's played.
Really?
Yeah.
Is she out already? Or?
Isn't she playing Katie McNally, I think? And I feel like it might
she
be on one
won,
of the very late
if she's still
matches.
In the if she's still in the draw, she must have won a match.
Okay, I'm gonna just seek her out because obviously everybody's just hanging
this is,
on the.
Well, I mean, if Matt doesn't know, is there anyone in the world that knows the fate of Victoria Kuzmova?
I think you're overestimating.
Oh, she's still
how,
due to play tonight.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, see, I did know.
Yeah.
No sleep for Matt tonight in the caravan. That's your evening / early morning sorted.
Does this mean we're going to have a 5 a.m. addendum to the podcast? Suddenly Matt won't have finished the edit because he just wants to slot in a little bit of a postscript about Victoria, who, let me just see which court she's due to be on. It says here that she's going to be on at 1:45 a.m., which is in half an hour from where we are now. So, the excitement is just too much to handle, is all I can say. But I can't find her on the order of play, so we'll just leave that there. And we'll catch up with how she gets on in tomorrow's show. And Matt will know all about it. Here she is. She's on next after the match on court number 8. And in fact, there's still two more matches to go on that court, but they're nearing a conclusion, Matt. So
this is top podcasting right here.
Yeah. Yeah, we've just lost at least 70% of the listenership.
Reading out
but for those
an
of you
order
left,
play.
For those of you left, thank you for sticking with us. Yeah, not to worry. If you do let me present it, you've got to just take your medicine. So, Catherine, Matt, it's been lovely. Have a good sleep, and we'll be back doing this again tomorrow, everybody. And I'll try to keep my order of play readings a little shorter tomorrow and more relevant. But if you've enjoyed it, you probably haven't, but if you have, do leave us a review on iTunes. Do tell your friends all about the Tennis Podcast, and do listen to us tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.